We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Welcome back here to 560 WQM and welcome to the 4 o'clock hour. Greg Likens alongside Channing Crowder. Mark Hochman out today. Again, we're still trying to confirm whether he's under the weather or if he is up in New York interviewing for the Jets general manager vacancy, which is now a reality. That's open. Adam Gase is the interim general manager, but we don't know how long that's going to take place there. But either way, Hawk will be back soon, and we hope that all goes well, whether just overcoming an illness or actually going
to
the interview.
There. We're losing from the show. If
well, I'm not saying
job.
We want to lose him from the show, but I'm saying like that would be a nice in if – the host of the show is also the general manager of the New York Jets.
I like it.
Right? Like, if Adam Gase can be the general manager and the head coach, like, why couldn't Hawk still host this show and be the GM for the Jets?
That's a hell of a point.
Right?
To give me some more jobs.
Yeah, he'd be like, hey, you know what? Let's give Le'Veon Bell a lot of money. Okay, go ahead. Go do it. And like, Channing, what do you think about this?
Hawk would ruin the team. Hawk doesn't value money. He doesn't value a dollar.
Do you think that would – you know him better than me, obviously, but do you think that Hawk would still be doing, you know, Boca restaurant reviews and stuff if he was the general manager of the Jets?
Maybe in the food court beat?
Yeah, he just enjoys that. He's a weird dude, man.
Okay.
Yeah,
well, hey, that was Channing who said that. By the way, we kind of moved past the song that Falero played.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Greg.
It's time for your chance to win $1,000. It's 560 WQAM's Take Donald's Dollars, your chance to take home $1,000. Text the word BROKE to 72881, and you're registered. Text BROKE, B-R-O-K-E, to 72881 now. If you don't win this time, your next chance at the top of the next hour. This is a national contest. Message and data rates may apply. Don't text and drive. It's all brought to you by Anajar and Levine Accident Attorneys. Call 1-800-747-FREE. BROKE, B-R-O-K-E, 72881.
It's for Crowder. Crowder, you get it,
you
right?
You know I hate this song.
Yeah,
he knows I hate this song.
Why do you hate this song?
You hear the words?
Yeah.
My rent's late a week ago. He knew it. He knew his rent was going to be late. And he worked so hard, but he can't pay his rent. So you set your overhead too high.
Well,
it's just a millennial. And now, hey, and I'm broke, can't do nothing. But you know what I need to do? I need to party.
Well, that's the part of this song that I've never understood with Ne-Yo and Pitbull. Is that Neo's singing about rent was due last week, yet he just made a lot of money so he can go spend it partying.
Dumb.
So I'm still trying to figure out, like, did he pay his rent? Or is that still not been paid, right?
No, he ain't paying it. They're going to party.
So instead of paying his rent.
That's what the song tells me. Can't pay it. But he got just enough to get in the club.
Gonna go broke.
Getting evicted. But I'm gonna go ahead and party tonight, even though my crap is going to be on the curb tomorrow. Right. My couch is going to be on the curb tomorrow. But you know what? The hell with it. Let me go to the club. He knows I hate this song.
Well, Flair, I'd say that of the three songs you played so far, this may have been your best.
Yeah, you want me to play some more Metallica?
No, you didn't play Metallica.
Oh.
That's the point, is you missed out on the opportunity
I'm
to play.
I'm sorry, I left out Axl Rose and Metallica.
You did it again. Axl Rose is the lead singer from Guns N' Roses. Guns N' Roses!
Rose, Axl Rose.
You knew
Guns
that,
N'
right?
Roses. No.
Jay, if I ask you Axl, you don't know who Axl Rose is? You've heard of Axl Rose.
Yeah.
But
oh, no, the name's always, I'm like, I've heard it, but I can't
but you
place
didn't,
him.
But you didn't know which band he was associated with?
No.
Okay.
I'm not a big music guy either.
Well, that's okay. I mean, like, but just a lot of people know Axl Rose is the lead singer from Guns N' Roses.
Well, people that listen to metal.
No. You don't have to listen to Guns N' Roses. You can just know that Axl Rose is the lead singer.
You know who DJ Paul is?
DJ Paul?
Mm-hmm.
Like DJ Paulie D from...
See? You made my point. Different genres. He is half of 3-6 Mafia. DJ Paul and Juicy J.
Okay. Uh-huh.
You've listened to 3-6 Mafia,
yeah.
Right? You
well,
know 3-6 Mafia.
Well, I know Juicy J.
But you don't know DJ Paul, just like I don't know Axl Rose. Different lives.
Yeah, I guess.
Bro, 3-6 Mafia, you know they have what? They have a Grammy.
No, they have an Oscar.
An Oscar.
Yeah, I knew that.
Does Metallica have an Oscar?
No, they got a lot of Grammys, though. What about Guns N' Roses?
Do they have an Oscar?
Oh, no, they do not.
Seems like 3-6 Mafia is better than both of them.
Well, okay. I mean, just because they have an Oscar, that means they're better?
It means a little something.
Well, yeah, it's certainly something that we can commend them for.
It's hard out here for a pimp.
That's a good song.
That's the one that got the Oscar.
It is, yes, from Hustle and Flow.
Yeah, so right. I know there's a whole bunch of guys I could name that people that listen to rock and all that stuff couldn't. People that listen to Billy Joel, I could name 100 artists they don't know. Because I don't. Billy Joel, I just found out what he looked like about 6 months ago.
Just because you brought him up, do you know that Billy Joel gave the commencement speech at my graduation from college?
Really?
Yes.
Isn't he like Mr. Magoo, right?
He's a little guy.
Tiny.
Well, I wouldn't say Mr. Magoo. He can see.
Oh, okay. But he's tiny, bald-headed, and he's kind of confused. He stumbles.
He's short, and it was a very, very short speech. In fact, the reason why he was giving the commencement speech for Syracuse University class of 2006 was because he had donated a lot of money to the School of Music. So they gave him an honorary degree and asked him to come up. And so he literally said to us, he goes, you know, I'm not really into speeches. I like to let my music and my lyrics do the talking. But when I was on my way up here, I guess they got him. He didn't want to fly from New York City where he lives up to Syracuse. It's a 5-hour drive. But so I guess they got him a limo. He said, on my way up, I was just looking out at the landscape here and I decided to write a song. And so he literally wrote a song and had everybody clap along with it. And then he also told us the only other wisdom that he wanted to impart is that do what you love and love what you do, and you'll have a good life. And that was pretty much it. And I'll say this, Channing, like he didn't go on for too long, and I remember what he said. Most of the time, these commencement speeches, they just drone on, and you're like, can we get this over with so we can like have a party that we now graduated? I remember what Billy Joel said. So,
I was going to say, did you feel gypped, but you seemed like you enjoyed it.
I would say that, you know, a bunch of people gathering in the Carrier Dome, and, you know, everybody's sitting around, and it's like, okay, come on. I didn't feel gypped. I kind of thought like, all right, that's Billy Joel. You talk about being true to yourself here on the radio. Yeah. He was true to himself. He's not into giving big speeches. He got his honorary degree. He left us with some wisdom. We got on with our day. I thought it was pretty good.
So I have to give a bunch of money to somebody to get an honorary degree?
That's how it works.
I'll tell you the secret, Greg. I don't have a degree.
Oh, you didn't graduate. So I can't call you an alum?
No, I got 40 credits. People call you an alum, and I say, oh, Florida alumni. But if you're really looking at what alumni means, it means you graduated.
Correct.
Doesn't mean you just attended.
So I just assumed you were a Florida alum.
Everybody assumes it. I left as a sophomore. Who gets a degree in 2 years?
Well, that's true, but some may just give you credit for the hypothetical that you've gone back and done some more studying.
Oh, yeah, no, I don't want to do with the study, and I just want the honorary degree. Like Dr. Dre gets honorary degrees. Snoop gets honorary degrees.
Right.
I can't get an honorary degree. Anyway, I don't need to be UF, just anywhere. Anywhere.
So any local college?
DeVry.
Like an online
You got a hookup
university?
At DeVry?
Oh, we can work on that. I don't have a hookup.
I just need something to hang on the wall for the kids to look at so I can point to it. My wife has 2 degrees. So now they're like, Daddy, Mommy has 2. Yeah, go to bed. Leave me alone. He asked too many damn questions.
You want the degree so you can have something you can be proud of.
Yeah, but no, just something to put by my wife's degree so I can look, I can make my kids proud.
Okay, I got you. By the way, speaking of being proud about something you've accomplished, I don't think Steve Keim should be proud of the way he's handled the Josh Rosen situation. And I think we probably all jumped to that conclusion prior to this, but we got a little more insight into it yesterday. So Josh Rosen, after the OTA practice for the Miami Dolphins, went on the Rich Eisen show. And in his exchange with Rich Eisen, for the most part, he was very PC and was saying all the right things about both the Dolphins, about the Cardinals, and kind of this awkward situation he found himself in. But he couldn't quite help himself when asked a question just in general about the Cardinals. And he doesn't name him and doesn't say his name, but he references Steve Keim, the Cardinals general manager, the guy who's responsible for drafting him and then ultimately trading him. Take a listen to what he said.
The only thing that like truly did kind of frustrate me through this whole process is that I still haven't heard from my old GM. I didn't talk to him for months before, still haven't talked to him months after. That was kind of frustrating, but for the most part, I'm just ready to put that whole chapter behind me and keep pushing on and playing football.
All right, so he didn't hear anything from Steve Keim. Now, with that being said, before I get your thoughts on that, this is what he said to Rich Eisen in the same interview about his exchange with the new head coach there in Arizona, Cliff Kingsbury.
So Cliff gave me an actual call a minute before it happened saying that we're going to draft Kyler. And I mean, I have the most respect for Cliff. I mean, I I don't slight anyone for making business decisions that they think are best for them and their family. I mean, I don't know if I'm allowed to say it, but like literally he's like, hey, so we're about to draft Kyler. I don't really know what happens now. But yeah, and I responded, I was like, yeah, I don't really know what happens either. I mean, regardless, at least he gave me the courtesy to give me a call.
So he went on to kind of say, hey, he was a man about it. Yeah. And, you know, I understand business decisions are made, but at the same time, if you have respect for somebody's career, then you should at least have the courtesy and the professionalism to give that person a call or sit down with them in person. You've been involved on the dark side of the NFL and the way they mistreat players and all this stuff. What do you make of his personification and how he's characterizing what happened between him and Steve Kahn?
It's something I talk about a lot in the show, where these young guys, these young players, they put emotion into the business of sports. When, find an example, when a McDonald's changes its shake machine, when it changes its milkshake machine, does it give a heads up to the milkshake machine that's about to be replaced by an upgrade? Because Josh Rosen is, Kyler Murray is an upgrade from Josh Rosen. It's a piece of a business. And when you replace that piece, you don't have to consult with the piece being replaced. Now, he's a person with emotions and feelings and upbringing and all that. And it's cool, and you're right, and my human side comes out a little bit, and I understand that. But I've been a part of the business of it, where why the hell does the GM have to talk to a guy he's about to cut or trade? They traded to the Dolphins. You don't have to tell him. If you tell him, maybe he tells his agent. If his agent tells somebody he knows, then maybe it takes some, you might lose, you know, leverage in your business deal. This is the thing that young guys get caught up in, where the team loves me. They don't love you. They love your ability. They don't like you. They like your ability.
Let me ask you a follow-up, though. Couldn't you argue that after the trade is made, that you get that Steve Keim maybe gives him a phone call and says, hey, man, no, it didn't work out. Wish you the best of luck. And that's it. Doesn't have to be any more than that.
And as a person, yes, Greg, but why? Why would I waste my time calling him? I'm Steve Keim.
It's the right thing to do.
The right thing in whose mind? Yours?
I think just in general.
In life, moral, general, human being terms. This is where the NFL and sports, not just NFL, this is where sports is different. Everybody, even when you look at Madden, he's a 92, he's a 87, he's a 52, he's a 54. I don't want any of those 52s or 54s on my team. I want some 90-rated guys. You're a commodity. And that's where, like, and fans sometimes have a problem seeing that, because they buy your jersey. You know, they really get attached to players. They love people still wear Marino jerseys, and it's justified. Marino's a great player for the Dolphins. I think the fame of the Dolphins kind of, around Marino and Shula through that time, that's why they're famous. I understand that. When Dan Marino couldn't play quarterback anymore, you know the Dolphins cut him. Jason Taylor, they cut his ass. Zach Thomas, they cut his ass.
They traded Jason Taylor.
You're a commodity. Some people approach it in a human way, but obviously Steve Keim looks at it as, I drafted quarterback one. Quarterback one is now going to be quarterback two. We brought in quarterback one. Let's get rid of quarterback two. He's a jersey number. And I felt that way. Jeff Ireland deals with business. Jeff Ireland, that's why. You know what? I might have PTSD. Jeff Ireland dealt with it that way. Like, there was no conversation about things. He wants to find you. It's not, they call you to his office, hey, well, you got in this little, riff, got in this problem at practice, you cussed out this guy, I have to do something instead of and have you kind of go back and forth. No. Linebacker 52 upset me. I'm going to fine you $5,000. There's no conversation. There's no reason to talk about it. And he has the power to do it. Steve Keim has the power to do what he's doing. Why does he care about, and this is not me talking, this is just the league, how it works with some GMs, I'd say. Why do I need to waste my time letting him know, give him the heads up that I'm replacing quarterback one? But he's quarterback one. Okay, whatever his name is, he's not quarterback one. Get rid of his ass, cut him. His agent will tell him he's cut. I don't need to waste my time doing that. I need to get ready for the draft. It's heartless. Greg, it is heartless. It's heartless as hell. And I think sometimes a lot of young players and fans don't understand it. Rashad Jones understands it. That's why he's not at OTAs right now. Rashad knows I walk in this building and start bawling, they're going to leave me alone. If I come to the first day of camp and get two picks and knock a couple people to sleep, they're going to be fine with me missing OTAs.
Right.
It's a business. It's heartless. People that want to put heart into it, they have a tough time dealing with the business side.
Listen, you're more experienced in this than me, so I take everything you say and it to heart, and I understand what you're saying, to use your phrase, you use the heart there. But generally speaking, I would have thought, like, if this was seventh round pick they decided to get rid of, that's one thing. You used the number 10 overall pick last year. You moved up to take this guy as basically the next face of the franchise. I would have thought that, considering the position and considering where they drafted him, they had at least a phone call to say, hey, listen, I know I talked to your agent about this. You already know the deal, but I just wanted to say, sorry, it didn't work out. Good luck in the future. That kind of thing.
Sorry? What's he sorry for? Giving the man $10 million for one season? Because that's let's be honest, that's what Rosen got, correct? Rosen got drafted.
Yes.
Rosen played in 13 games. They gave him $10 million and traded him. Or that's 12, 13, somewhere around there. But
yes.
So I gave you $10 million over a 12-month, or really, what, 11-month period. Sorry? He should call him and say, Rosen, you're welcome. We traded up to get you at 10. We gave you $10 million for a year. Continue with your career. We don't want you anymore. You and am I wrong? Let me tell me if I'm wrong. You're worthless to us. Now that Kyler Murray's on this team, your contract and your ability is worthless to us. Did they draft Josh Rosen for his hot tub ability?
The only reason he's worthless is because Steve Keim apparently made a bad decision by selecting Josh Rosen and then admitted the bad decision by drafting Kyler Murray the next year. My point is, this is all Steve Keim's doing, and Steve Keim has been very unprofessional the entire way, and you could argue that it's crazy that he still has a job, but at this juncture, maybe he's in the running for the Jets GM position if Adam Gase is qualified.
He's working on it.
But I guess, to your point, I understand. It's a cold-hearted business. They don't care about the people involved. I just thought that they may make an exception considering it's a quarterback and such a high-profile scenario. We'll talk more about this as the show goes on. But when we come back, Marcus Thompson is going to join us from The Athletic, has a new book out about Kevin Durant. We'll get his thoughts and everything KD next here on QAM.
Radio.com.
Welcome back here to the Hockman and Crowder Show here on 560 WQAM. Greg Likens filling in for Hawk today, and we've got a treat here as we go out to the Toyota of Hollywood hotline to welcome in Marcus Thompson, Bay Area columnist from The Athletic and the author of the new book, KD, Kevin Durant's Relentless Pursuit to Be the Greatest. You can follow him on Twitter at Thompson Scribe, and the book is available now wherever books are sold. Marcus, thanks for joining the program. How are you doing today?
I'm pretty good. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, so let's start at the beginning for Kevin Durant. What did he have to overcome in his personal life and the surroundings that he faced in his youth growing up in Prince George's County in Maryland and then to get to the NBA?
I mean, it started when he was one, when his father left, and it was just him, his older brother, who's like 2 years older than him, and his mom. So it was a bad start. He had a single mom who didn't have much money. They ended up having to live with his mother, with her mother, his grandmother, and it was just a rough start. So maybe the first, 10 years of his life was the struggle of poverty and his mother trying to make it and like kind of bouncing around a little bit. Then his father got back into his life in middle school, and things still just, man, they just never really got that much better. He dealt with some crazy deaths, some like gut-wrenching deaths to people who were close to him, and somehow he just managed to find serenity in basketball. Like that was his saving grace. He spent all his time in the gym and fell in love with basketball because it was his escape and he needed one.
And Marcus, hearing about all that, and we haven't read the book yet. I'm going to read it as soon as I can, but we haven't read it yet. But you know, just all the tough upbringing. When did that happen? When he stopped being the nice guy? Because I remember back in OKC, he was always the nice guy. I think it's the criticism people gave him with his MVP speech, where he just kind of said, "Hey," it kind of just made him see, "Hey, these guys are going to criticize me no matter how I act." But at some point in his NBA career, he stopped being the nice guy. When did that happen?
I think you're right. I think the scrutiny and criticism that came from his move, like, it hardened him. And look, I think that element was there. Like, he had that in him. I mean, nice guys don't grow up on the streets of Prince George's County, right? Like, like you got to have some kind of edge to you. I mean, the situations he's been in, the people he knows, like the places he went to play hoop, you got to have some edge to you. But I think he was in that Oklahoma City mode of like, let me be the good guy. Let me be humble. Let me put on the good face. I think you're right. Like once he made that move and that criticism was just relentless and coming, he was like, look, all right, y'all about to get the whole KD then. And I think what we've seen is him saying, all right, no more fronting, no more only showing you the good side. I'm just going to be 100% me, even if y'all don't like it.
And what, which suit fits him better? The nice guy suit with the bow tie or the guy with the Lacoste shirt underneath his suit saying, hey, I got a jacket on, but I ain't going too far?
You know, I was in the same boat of like criticizing his moves. Like, why are you arguing with 17-year-olds on Instagram? Like, it just doesn't even matter, right? But as I've like learned his journey and like kind of dug into his life, and I actually started to appreciate that somebody who's just being transparent and honest, right? Most of our superstars, especially in this day and age of brands and social media filters and, you know, moguls and all that, like, everybody's fake. Everybody's some kind of PR concoction or some kind of, like, crafted, branded image. But KD kind of violates all that. He's like, yeah, you're going to get all of it. You're going to get the vulnerable parts. You're going to get the flaws. You're going to get the good stuff. You're going to get the ball. Like, I'm just going to be me. And I actually have grown to appreciate that he is willing to be transparent and vulnerable and look flawed in front of us, because not everybody from his, like, millennial background is willing to do that. Everybody's front these days.
Marcus Thompson, Bay Area columnist from The Athletic and the author of the new book, KD, Kevin Durant's Relentless Pursuit to Be the Greatest, joining us here on 560 WQAM. Marcus, with the controversial decision for him to leave OKC to go to Golden State, I'm just curious for a South Florida audience, how much did the Thunder's loss to the Miami Heat in the 2012 NBA Finals impact his decision a few years later?
Man, I think it was that taste that got him hooked, right? I think in 2011 he got the taste of the Finals and like what that's like and what was next for him, right? So that's 2011, and he got a dose, and they were all so young, and he couldn't get back. I think that was a big deal that he got it so young and was kind of like expecting it, and he couldn't get back, and he felt like, man, maybe we never get back if I stay here. Maybe there's not enough money, you know, in the franchise, enough wherewithal to pull it off. I feel like Kevin Durant has always in his, like, heart and his spirit, right, has always felt like he deserves this stage that he's on right now, at the top of the game, at the highest level, playing in the Finals, playing against the best dudes in the league, and showing, giving them the business, right, showing them what he can do. I feel like there was something about Oklahoma City and probably several things that made him feel like, man, it's hard for me to get on that stage that I belong while I'm here. So he chose another route.
And Marcus, while you're doing all the research, looking into it, talking to KD, his people around him, the entourage, whatever, you know, all the research you did, was there any moment you had to sit back and say, what did you just say? That most, you know, surprising revelation that hit you when you were doing your research?
Well, Kevin Durant said something that that had me like, hold on, what? I wrote about it in the book because, like Kevin is a very, like, he's one of those dudes who likes to be deep for no reason, right? Like, he really knows how to, like, pull things apart and examine and investigate. He's really inquisitive that way. So I remember when Kanye West said slavery was a choice, and that day they had a game that day, and everybody in the arena is talking about Kanye crazy, Kanye tripping, and, you know, some people are mad. So I go to KD, and he's like, I mean, well, y'all don't want to know what I think. And I'm like, uh-oh, KD, what are you saying? And we ended up having this long dialogue about partially why he agreed with him, but he was just being, like, contrarian, right, and being difficult and challenging. So he does stuff like that all the time. He just argues for the sake of arguing. I thought that was a pretty telling sign of this inquisitive, kind of curious dude who just don't like status quo and just attacks them relentlessly.
Marcus Thompson, Bay Area columnist from The Athletic, the author of the new book, KD, Kevin Durant's Relentless Pursuit to Be the Greatest, which is available now. I want to ask you this, Marcus, because based on the national narrative, it seems like a foregone conclusion that Kevin Durant will depart the Bay Area in free agency this summer. Have you gained any insight with all the extensive conversations you've had with him about where his head may be at in regards to that decision?
The insight that I've gained is that Kevin Durant could change his mind five times, right? Like, and that in the end, he feels so much that it's going to come down to D-Day anyway. That's what I think. I feel like he has all the options in the world. He's the number one free agent. Like, this is a position he won it and he earned. So he is the prized possession of free agency. And now he got all these options. And one of them is definitely to go to New York. That is without question. That's what the scuttle is. And most people know that that's what it is. So I do feel like, though, when it's time to make the decision, like KD will be at a crossroads. And it's going to be tough. Like, it's going to, like, New York's going to have a plan that is so thorough and mapped out. Because he to walk away from Steph Curry, to walk away from three championships, to walk away from more money, to walk away from a new arena, to walk away from like this recent kind of surge in KD love and everybody in the Bay calling him the best in the league, you know, echoing the voice of the national media and just the national conversation. Like, he's kind of got it all here. So I just don't know how he's going to sit in front of these other teams and they're going to say, yeah, what we got is better than what you had, and he walks away. Maybe he does. Maybe he's got the plan and he goes through it, but it's just going to be tough to say, yeah, we got $221 million in, like, the perfect situation. What you got? And the other answer just seems to be one-upping him. I just don't know if I see that.
And with the book's done, so, you know, in your opinion, with what happened last night, with the draft lottery, with Knicks not getting the first pick, and that was one of the destinations people are talking about. Do you think the Pelicans, you know, jumping into that first pick, anything that happened in the lottery will affect KD's decision? Does anything look good to you for KD with the situation you're talking about, the perfect situation for Kevin Durant?
I think getting Zion would have been, like, a much better look for New York, right? If he can go be like, man, we got the young talent with Zion, we got – we're trying to get Kyrie, we got, you know, that would have looked great. With that said, the number three pick is not bad, and if somehow that means they end up with Anthony Davis, that actually, I think, might look good for the Knicks, right? Because if you could say, yo, we got Anthony Davis, you know, we can bring on you and Kyrie, like, that's a squad that he could win a championship with in New York, I think, or at least be in the conversation. And the whole thing is he's got to feel like he can win a championship because, man, can you imagine if he left the Warriors and left that, like, perfect setup to go and be a first-round exit in the eighth seed? Like, that would be worse than what he went through already. So, I don't know. It feels like the best thing would have been Zion, but I don't think the Knicks are in a bad spot because of the draft lottery at all.
No, it sounds like Kevin Durant's in a terrific spot with as many options available to him as he would
right?
hope for.
Man, I need that life. I can pick and choose what I want.
No doubt about it. Hey, Marcus, congratulations on completing the new book. I know you've had success with your bestseller, Golden, The Miraculous Rise of Steph Curry, and now another one, now KD, Kevin Durant's Relentless Pursuit to Be the Greatest. It's available now wherever books are sold. Thank you so much for joining us, and good luck with the book, all right?
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right, good to hear from Marcus there, Channing. And, yeah, that was a good question you asked him about what's going to happen now with the NBA landscape considering everything that transpired last night in the NBA draft lottery. But Kevin Durant, it doesn't seem like his decision will be affected all that much. I mean, this guy is sitting pretty. All of the free agents out there, yeah, they're looking to get the big paydays, but it seems like Durant, more so than anybody, is probably positioned the best to make an awesome decision for his life moving forward.
Oh, yeah. He's the pretty girl sitting at the club. Like, he doesn't have to work. Like, he has all the options. Like Marcus just said, if he goes to New York, they're going to add pieces. Even if it's not KD, they have to rebuild their team. Number three pick. So if it's R.J. Barrett, if it's Jay Morant, like, they have young pieces to attract, to attract an older guy. And maybe KD. And then if it is New Orleans or wherever else it is, the Celtics, they have a lot of pieces to move. KD's sitting back as the pretty girl at the bar, and she can, no, I'm fine, and wait for the right dude to walk up to her. KD's sitting pretty, Greg.
He really is. Now, one of the things I wanted to talk to Marcus about, because, again, I like to, when we do these interviews, we've got a national guy on or somebody from outside of the market, is bringing the South Florida angle to it. And so I did think it was interesting, his response about the 2012 NBA Finals, because that was the first championship for LeBron James. It also signified LeBron James and Chris Bosh and the power move that they had made in free agency to team with Dwayne Wade and make the big three. It paid off for them. And I think that opened the floodgates to Kevin Durant a few years later. But it was interesting to hear Marcus's thoughts on that. Said, hey, Kevin Durant got there and was so close. He got a taste of what it may be like to win a championship. Saw one of his contemporaries actually hoist the Larry O'Brien Trophy, and you get the feeling that even though it was a few years later, that that opened up the idea for Kevin Durant to say, you know what, I don't have to be loyal to the Oklahoma City Thunder. I need to do what's best for me.
Oh, yeah, and two things on that. With seeing a super team come together, I think KD didn't recognize the criticism he was going to get because he wasn't the first one. The Boston Big Three was there before the Heat. And then the Heat and LeBron James, who, and that was my second point, KD, he came out with an article years ago that said he's tired of being number two. It was always LeBron, KD, LeBron, KD. I honestly believe KD's past LeBron if you want to do your top five on NBA players right now. But KD saw the guy that everybody looks, you know, looks up to more than him, the one player, and he saw him make a decision. And he saw him go have success. So KD went, honestly, if you look at it, went and did the same thing LeBron did. He didn't bring his own two players together, but he went to Golden State, an already established team, and still got criticized. But all that coming together where LeBron, the Big Three, Wade, kind of gave KD that push or gave him or, you know, around the corner way encouraged him to leave because, hey, I've seen the success, but this super team knocked me off the pedestal. Let me go build my own super team. It always comes back to South Florida, like Florida man thing. Look on Twitter, Greg. Yeah, the Florida man. Some dude was having sex with an alligator a couple days ago. Florida man. It always comes back to Florida.
Well, just exactly where I thought this was going to go, from Kevin Durant changing teams to sex with an alligator. You know, you just that's why I enjoy working with you, Channing, when I get the opportunity. My goodness. Real quick, I think I had a pretty cogent point that I wanted to make as a follow-up to that, but you just threw me completely off. With this sex with an alligator.
Come on, man. That's, you know, I've had sex with gators, but Florida gators
when
I was there.
Like
the
like co-eds.
Yeah. The actual reptile, though, I left them alone. I catch them, but there was no sexual actions.
Okay. The one thing I do want to follow up with, thank God, with Marcus Thompson was, you know, sometimes when you interview somebody like Kevin Durant or you write a book or do a project in which you do a feature on a particular player, you tend to, and he's a professional, and he's really well-respected, but you tend to kind of maybe be a little biased, right? Because you spend a lot of time with them, you get that access. But I was happy that he pointed out that even he has told Kevin Durant, man, what are you doing arguing with 17-year-olds on social media, right? Like, because that's the one thing about Kevin Durant, among others. Like, I've been critical of him, but that's the one thing that I really can't comprehend. Like, the fact that he wanted to go to a winner, you can make sense of that even if you disagree with it. But the fact that he cares what all these kids are saying about him on social media who, you know, they've got no say in all this. He's a multimillionaire. He's at the peak of his powers. He is a guy that, as you mentioned, probably the best player skill-wise in the NBA right now. Yet he cares about what some kid is tweeting about, you know, hypothetically from his mom's basement.
Marcus said it. He's still a millennial. He's still a millennial. It surprised me because Falero always lets me know that I am technically a millennial, but caring about what other people think that have nothing to do with it. A general manager, a head coach, you know, an NBA head coach, or, you know, somebody that really covers and knows basketball, listen to their opinions. I always say put a value on your evaluators. A 17-year-old kid saying you suck, who cares? He's in his mom's basement eating cat food with no girlfriend. He's a virgin. Leave him alone. But it's just a millennial. I really believe that because I go, even the guys I talk to now, the young players that I go talk to, they sit and as soon as the meeting's over, they check their Twitter, check their Instagram, check their Twitter. People care what, I don't say nobodies, but to you, they're a nobody. These millennials really care what the nobodies think about them, and it's part, it is there. I don't think you could talk to those guys. I think it's just beat into your head now. There are 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds now with Twitter and Instagram and, I don't know, MyFace, Facebook. I don't really do MyFace. I don't think it's MyFace, Greg.
No, it was MySpace and Facebook. You sound like Bill Belichick.
I do. Don't I?
You do.
I have a very old soul, but KD tries to get away from it, but I believe that millennial comes out in those guys. They've been trained to do it. They go on their phone every time they get a chance. Back when I was young, you remember watching the pregame when they were showing guys in their locker with the headphones on, eyes closed, you know, just nodding their head? Every single TNT ESPN game, when they have the pregame with the guys in the locker room, every one of them's face down in their phone. 10-15 minutes before tip-off, face down in their phone. They care about that crap. KD, LeBron, all the top players, Giannis, AD, they all care about that damn phone and that social media.
You know what I learned so far in this brief interaction we've had during this segment is you're talking about alligator sex, and then now you're talking about these millennials eating cat food, of all things, in their mom's basement. I never heard that.
That's what happens when I see a curmudgeon sitting down trying to make everybody's life bad, upset with their life. They always have a cat food can in front of them.
Interesting. Okay.
I don't know. It's just my imagination, man.
I thought I was going to learn a lot from Marcus Thompson, but really, Channing Crowder is enlightening me. All right, we got a lot more to get to here on the program. Let's take a quick timeout. We'll be back here on 560 WQAM. We're back here on 560 WQAM. Greg Likens filling in for Mark Hochman alongside Channing Crowder. Eric Valero with us as well. Big thanks to Marcus Thompson for joining us here. And, man, good stuff there with the book about Kevin Durant. I still can't believe that after we conclude talking to him, that somehow a Kevin Durant conversation turned into discussing a man having sex with an alligator.
You know Florida Man. You don't see that on Twitter?
Yeah, the hashtag Florida Man and all that stuff. Florida.
Right. The most recent one I heard was some guy had sex with an alligator. And I don't know, it popped up in my mind. The best thing was when we were coming back from break and you just looked at me and said, "We just talked about alligator sex, didn't we?" That tickled me, man. I'm not going to lie. But yeah, Florida Man, you know, we get a lot of trouble down here. Yeah,
very true, very true. I saw a story from last week where a Florida man and a Florida woman were pulled over, and the cops said, "Hey, we need to search your truck." This is on the west coast of Florida. And, you know, I assume when police do that, that perhaps they're thinking there's some sort of illegal stuff in there, maybe some drugs, guns, whatever it might be. And then they opened up a backpack, and there were a bunch of baby alligators in the backpack.
That's money, baby.
And these people are like, "Oh, yeah, there's nothing in there. They're just live animals. You know, they're just taken from the Everglades." Right? So you just never know.
And that's a felony. I got in trouble at Florida from catching gators illegally.
Mm.
Yep. Ron Zook. I had to go talk to Coach Zook about it. And he, "Oh, what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do? Like, suspend you?" What? I said, "Coach, it's not that bad, bro. We're just enjoying the Mother Nature." He got hot.
Well, you're a Florida gator catching a Florida gator.
I thought it was cool.
Yeah.
I found out it was a felony.
Okay, yeah, that's...
Wasn't the best thing.
Hey, Channing, we got a big 5 o'clock hour coming up. We are going to reset the Adam Gase news from the New York Jets and all of the hilarity that has ensued when it comes to that whole scenario. Plus, we're going to have another code word for your chance to win $1,000. Stay tuned. Much more to get to in the 5 o'clock hour coming up next. Radio.com.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.